listening to West Virginia Week, a regular podcast from West Virginia Public Broadcasting that looks back at the major stories of the week. I'm your host this week, Maria Young. On this West Virginia Week, growing pains in the Eastern Panhandle and a new plan to house homeless veterans in Huntington by the end of the month. Also, the head of West Virginia's third largest university hit the road this past week. And the state is poised to pick up hundreds of thousands of federal dollars to help offset Medicaid cuts. But will it be enough to prevent rural hospital closures? Let's jump right in now with a few short news stories. West Virginia just became the first state in the nation to ban synthetic dyes in school foods. Nutrition directors in all 55 counties are working to ensure the meals students get when classes resume adhere to a new state law. It bans certain colorful food dyes tied to some behavior problems and long-term health concerns. Tony Crago is the director of the Office of Child Nutrition for the West Virginia Department of Education.
I'm 100% confident that the kids will be fed well-fed, nutritious meals, and that the staff in these counties are going to make this work.
There have been changes in some popular food items. Walking tacos are off the menu for now because Doritos use the forbidden dyes. Strawberry milk is allowed, but the pink color kids love now comes from trace amounts of beet juice. Flash flooding has been in the spotlight nationwide and in West Virginia, prompting Governor Patrick Morrisey to announce two new flood mitigation studies. The studies will be conducted by the state in partnership with the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers to examine flood risks and potential mitigation strategies across two watersheds. The Kanawha River Basin Feasibility Study will explore a comprehensive array of flood risk management strategies across 20 counties, including 14, that were directly impacted by the June 2016 floods. The Upper Guyandotte Flood Study will study the Wyoming County communities of Mullins, Pineville, and Oceana, ranked among the highest in the state for cumulative flood risk, with more than 30% of the county's population living in the floodplain. The state will contribute $3 million across both studies, matched by the federal government for a total of a $6 million investment. Both studies will be coordinated with the West Virginia State Resiliency Office to ensure findings are integrated into a broader state mitigation and preparedness plan. West Virginia would become part of a transcontinental rail network if a new proposed merger is approved. Curtis Tate has the story.
Union Pacific, the nation's largest railroad, has offered to buy Norfolk Southern in a deal valued at $85 billion. Norfolk Southern, based in Atlanta, has about 800 miles of track in West Virginia. They're primarily used to haul coal from southern West Virginia to the port of Norfolk, Virginia. Norfolk Southern's line across southern West Virginia has clearances for double-stack shipping containers, though, opening up the possibility of a single railroad carrying those containers from the West Coast to Norfolk. Union Pacific and Norfolk Southern trains currently switch from one railroad to another in Chicago or other points along the Mississippi River, something trucks don't have to do. It's too early to tell what impact the combined company could have on the state or on jobs. The Federal Surface Transportation Board would have to approve the deal. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
West Virginia's primary elections are almost a year away, but as Chris Schultz reports, state Democrats are already raising some general concerns.
In a press release Tuesday, West Virginia Democratic Party Chair Mike Pushkin condemned the West Virginia Republican Party's decision to close its 2026 primary elections. He says the decision shuts out nearly 300,000 independent voters in the state.
We want more folks participating in the democratic process. Democracy works better when more people are voting. So we're not going to shut independents out of our primary.
The West Virginia Republican Party Executive Committee voted to hold a closed primary in January, but Pushkin says there was hope of a reversal at the party's summer meeting over the weekend. Josh Holstein, the newly elected chairman of the West Virginia Republican Party, says the party wants everyone who believes in their values and platform to join them by becoming a Republican. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
The Public Service Commission is accepting public comments on proposed electric rate increases. Jack Walker has more.
Appalachian Power and Wheeling Power filed for a rate increase in April that would raise customer prices by an average of roughly 3%. Now the commission is hosting virtual and in-person hearings for public comment on what would be a $72 million total increase. The public comment hearing will be held August 11 at 5:30 p.m. It will be followed by an evidentiary hearing August 12 at 9:30 a.m. Both hearings will be held in Charleston. Members of the public can provide written or verbal comments to the commission during the first hearing. For more information, visit our website at wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
A major point of contention with the installation of broadband internet access in remote parts of the state comes down to who is allowed to use utility poles. To reduce delays and assist in deployment of broadband, the Public Service Commission of West Virginia has authorized the use of temporary attachments on utility poles. Broadband providers need to attach their communication lines to existing utility poles. The pole owners, usually electric utility or phone companies, are required to share space on the poles. The state has an estimated 2.5 million poles, the majority of which are owned by electric power companies. In a statement, the PSC said it expects the owners of those utility poles to expedite, not hinder, attachments, which will accelerate access to sorely needed broadband throughout West Virginia. Those changes are effective immediately. Meanwhile, several county commissions in northern West Virginia are banding together against a proposed transmission line project. Chris Schultz has more.
The Monongalia County Commission voted Wednesday to formally oppose the construction of the Mid-Atlantic Resiliency Link and called on all county elected officials to do the same. The link project would connect power stations in southwestern Pennsylvania to a substation in Virginia, crossing through four West Virginia counties. Commissioner Sean Sikora acknowledged that the energy needs Builder NextEra is trying to address with the project are real.
We just don't see a benefit to them running this line across our state, across our beautiful county, and not providing us any benefit.
Both the Hampshire County and Preston County Commissions approved similar resolutions opposing the Mid-Atlantic Resiliency Link in May. Earlier this month, the Hampshire County Commission proposed creating a coalition of local governments in opposition to the project. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Chris Schultz in Morgantown.
The city of Huntington has launched a pilot project designed to eliminate homelessness among military veterans. Mission Zero has an aggressive goal to identify every homeless veteran in Huntington and get them housed within 30 days. Mayor Patrick Farrell's office kicked it off with a gathering of social workers, health care providers, and other partners at Harris Riverfront Park on Tuesday. Farrell's senior advisor, Jan Rader, says the partnerships are needed to provide support for long-term success.
A lot of our unsheltered population do suffer from substance use disorder and severe mental illness, and they have the right to refuse medication or treatment if it's offered to them. And so we want to find creative ways to keep them engaged.
Rader says Mission Zero hopes the successes will lead to similar projects with other homeless populations. State Senator Mike Stewart appeared before a confirmation committee in the U.S. Senate this week. Eric Douglas followed along.
Stewart, a Republican from Kanawha County, has been tapped to be general counsel to the Department of Health and Human Services, advising Secretary Robert Kennedy directly. Thursday, Stewart appeared before the U.S. Senate Finance Committee for a confirmation hearing. Senator Maggie Hassan, a Democrat from Massachusetts, asked about a bill he introduced in West Virginia to ban medical substance abuse treatment programs. Kennedy has come out in support of those programs.
I'm just trying to get at, so you'll support efforts at the department to expand access to all types of medication-assisted treatment, including both methadone and buprenorphine?
I'm going to support Secretary Kennedy on this issue. I agree with him on it.
If approved by the committee, Stewart's nomination will go before the full Senate. That leaves an open seat in the state Senate. Stewart is currently the chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Eric Douglas in Charleston.
A bankruptcy sale hearing for a West Virginia coal operator will now take place on August 5th in Wilmington, Delaware. South Fork Coal filed for a Chapter 11 bankruptcy back in February. A hearing on the proposed sale of that company had been scheduled for last week. An array of conservation groups and the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection object to the sale. The groups say South Fork has amassed dozens of violations of the Clean Water Act and the Surface Mine Reclamation and Control Act. They have sued to stop the company from hauling coal and machinery over the U.S. Forest Service roads in the Monongahela National Forest. They also say the road use permits South Fork now has are not transferable to a new owner. Meanwhile, new reports cast doubt on the economic impact of natural gas production in Appalachia. Curtis Tate has more.
The Ohio River Valley Institute has been tracking the natural gas industry since the beginning of the fracking boom nearly two decades ago. While fracking has increased GDP in 30 counties in Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, the Institute has found that overall, the number of jobs has declined in those counties, and so has the population. Sean O'Leary, one of the report's authors, calls the region Frackalacha.
The Frackalachian counties actually are drags economically on the states of Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia.
The gas industry has been promoted by state and local officials as a driver of economic growth. In recent years, that's included an expansion of gas-fired power plants and data centers. Still, the report points out that those facilities employ very few people permanently. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Curtis Tate in Charleston.
A new program year for AmeriCorps begins this fall. The agency provides stipends for community service programs across the country, including West Virginia. Now, groups like the Appalachian Forest National Heritage Area are accepting applications for community organizations that want to host an AmeriCorps member from 2025 to 2026. The organization oversees AmeriCorps placements centered around natural and cultural heritage in several West Virginia counties. Eligible hosts include nonprofit or governmental organizations located within a 16-county region on the eastern side of the state. To host an AmeriCorps member full-time costs $6,500, and applications are reviewed on a rolling basis. For more information, visit the website for the Appalachian Forest National Heritage Area. West Virginia's annual back-to-school sales holiday is coming up. Jack Walker has more details.
The annual initiative waives sales taxes for qualifying back-to-school purchases. This year, it runs from August 1 to August 4. During that window, most purchases of school items, clothing, technology, and sports equipment will not come with a state sales tax. There is no limit on how many items can be purchased without sales tax, so long as they fall below the eligible price for each item. Certain items sold to West Virginia shoppers by mail or internet may qualify for the sales tax exemption, if bought and processed by retailers during the sales tax window. For more information on the sales tax holiday and qualifying purchases, visit our website at wvpublic.org. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Shepherdstown.
West Virginia's Eastern Panhandle is growing, and local leaders say facilities need to keep up. The desire for a bigger, renovated space led the Jefferson County Commission to buy two new buildings this year. With a move to the new space underway, the commission must also decide what to do with its previous Charlestown properties. As Jack Walker reports, that decision means balancing financial needs, historic preservation, and economic vitality downtown.
The Jefferson County Commission used to meet in the basement of the Charlestown Library. But in July, it held a forum on the future of its old downtown offices in a newly acquired county administrative building with a full auditorium of seating. The building is the former home of the American Public University System, a private online education organization. When the system chose to close its in-person facilities in Charlestown, the commission entered into a $24 million deal to purchase the two buildings for the county government. Commission President Pasha Majdi said the county government jumped at the chance to secure the new buildings.
They had just refurbished, remodeled, and redone the buildings. So you have a basically brand new building. They didn't construct it, but they redid it, that they moved out of. And it was sitting vacant. Instead of building a new complex for $90 million, we were able to purchase two new buildings that mostly suit our needs for $23.5 million, significantly less.
The Jefferson County government has long operated from the same city block of Washington Street, the main road in downtown Charlestown. Among them is the historic county courthouse. It's where trials for militant abolitionist John Brown, plus the West Virginia Mine Wars, took place. But Majdi said the county has long outgrown these facilities.
For 25 years, the county had been planning to build on its own a new government facility to house all, or at least most, perhaps all, county functions in one location to consolidate and to move out of disparate buildings all across the county into one location to maximize efficiency.
The commission closed its purchase of the two university system properties in June and is in the process of transitioning operations to its new facilities. That means converting one of the properties into a functional courthouse, which the commission expects to cost more than $11 million. Now, the commissioners are looking for buyers for their original properties in Charlestown's downtown, both to offset the costs of their purchase and to avoid upkeep expenses for the out-of-use buildings. Majdi said he hopes the city of Charlestown would consider taking the properties out of the county commission's hands.
Under state code, there's only certain entities we can deal with. We cannot sell to the private sector. We cannot sell to a big company that wants to invest. There are other entities that can do that, but the county government cannot do that because of state law. A municipal government can do that.
Charlestown Mayor Mike George attended the forum earlier this month. He said the city is not currently interested in buying the properties, for now leaving the sale in the county commission's hands. Meanwhile, the future of these properties has sparked some concern among residents. The Preservation Alliance of West Virginia has placed the stretch of county-owned buildings on its endangered properties list and has criticized the county for beginning its move before firming up plans for the historic downtown. Plus, businesses and economic leaders in Charlestown worry about the properties falling into disuse and disrupting the vibrant character of Charlestown's downtown center. Majdi said the July 17 community forum marked a step toward solidifying plans for the properties. Commissioners spoke with community stakeholders about what they'd like to see the properties become and funding mechanisms for such projects. Some ideas seek to strike a balance between protection of the downtown and public interest. That includes one idea from the County Museum. Director Marcella Gans said her team has set forth a proposal to develop the historic courthouse into a new public museum space for Jefferson County, one that tells the history of the site and the county at large.
That's quite a legacy, and it's one that needs to be maintained. And so by moving the museum to the courthouse, that would be a tremendous asset to the county and to the nation because of the great history that maintains importance even for today. The John Brown trial in many ways is still not over, nor is the West Virginia miners trial. Those are settled cases, but many of the same issues still remain.
Majdi and other commissioners said they'd be interested in the idea, especially if the museum could secure public funding that would shift some development costs away from the county commission. For the remaining properties, Majdi said the commission is still weighing its options. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Jack Walker in Charlestown.
After its summer meeting in Morgantown last weekend, the West Virginia Republican Party now has a new chairman. I caught up with Josh Holstein to find out more about him and his vision for the party's future in West Virginia. You know, first of all, congratulations. Are you pretty excited about this new position?
Oh, absolutely. It's such a wonderful opportunity, and I just feel humbled and honored to be able to serve the party and lead our party at such a young age.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
You know, how do you think this happened? Tell me a little bit about your background and experience and what you feel maybe helped your party to kind of rally behind you.
Yeah, so, you know, I grew up in the southern coalfields of West Virginia, lifelong Boone County, and you know, come from a long line of West Virginia coal miners, and really just a typical West Virginia story. Working class parents, working class home, and you know, as I became a teenager, I started getting involved in politics and volunteering for campaigns and making connections. And then when I was 18 years old, I filed to run for the House of Delegates and unseated an incumbent. We worked very, very hard. Unseated an incumbent and won election in 2020 and then subsequently won re-election in 22 and 24. So I've been in the House for three terms now, for 5.5 years. And I've been on the state executive committee for the West Virginia Republican Party for just under 6 years. So I've been involved as long as I've been able to, and I believe that I've proved myself to the folks that know me and my voters back at home as well.
So, you know, in a state like West Virginia that is so heavily Republican, there are some differences within the party, right?
Sure. Absolutely.
So tell me a little bit about your platform.
So as chair of the Republican Party, it's my job to bring Republicans together and to support Republicans, Republican elected officials up and down the state. And that's irrespective of where we fall along, you know, the spectrum of ideology. But I do believe there's a lot more that brings us together as Republicans than divides us. We have a Republican Party platform that everyone on the right-leaning side of things can agree to. And we have a leader in President Trump, who was the first Republican nominee for president in over 20 years to win the popular vote. We have a leader in him that the American people are receptive to and the folks of West Virginia admire. And I think that's borne out in the election results that we've been seeing.
So can you be a little bit more specific about the mm-hmm. platform for the state of West Virginia? What do you envision? You talked about unifying, you know, a broad spectrum of folks across the party mm-hmm. platform. What's your vision for this party?
Sure, absolutely. My number one objective is to communicate better. So that's one of the things that I ran on and shared with the folks on the state executive committee when I spoke to them and asked for their vote. Is I believe as a young person who's also ran you know, several political races, I know how to communicate and I know how to get our message out there, and I feel that you know, we can do even better than what we are right now if we have someone at the helm that can communicate better. So and again, our platform is you know, we have 16 or 18 bullets of you know, priorities of what we stand behind. We believe in, you know, strong borders. We believe in lower taxes, less government regulation. We believe in life. We believe in educational choice. You know, we believe in standing up for our law enforcement, and, you know, just trying to provide a better way of life for working class folks across the country, and particularly here in West Virginia.
That was the newly elected West Virginia Republican Party Chairman, Josh Holstein. Mike Davis is the president of Fairmont State University. And even though the fall semester starts back up in just a few short weeks, he has spent this past week driving the length of the state in a camper van. Reporter Chris Schultz sat down with Davis to talk about the reasons for this trip and the state of the university.
Well, first of all, where are you going?
When I started at Fairmont State, I said I was going to do all 55 counties in the first 2 years. So I've got about six left. So the first night when we leave, we're going to stay in Wood County and then hit Pleasance County the next day for breakfast. And then I'll head to the southern part of the state. So do McDowell, Mingo, Wyoming, Pocahontas. I've been to Mercer County, but I'm going to spend some time there too. Concord University has a new president, so I'm going to have breakfast with her. So I'm going to visit some counties I've visited before, but in more depth, and then check off those last counties I haven't visited yet.
Why is it so important for you to do trips like this and check off those last remaining six counties?
I think people forget we're the third largest institution in the state sometimes. So if I think about what a regional university is supposed to do, as the largest regional university in the state, we serve all 55 counties. And I think part of it is reminding those people that we exist and that we're serving them. We really fill an important role because we're the community's university, right? So we are attracting mostly students from West Virginia and then some from the surrounding area. But the idea is we're the right size to be flexible enough to respond to student and business leaders and state needs, but we're also large enough to be everything the students need us to be. And that's a big part of it, is a regional institution really can do things that the flagships can't or that the small privates can't because of our positioning as both a state institution, but one that's the right size for our students. And part of that is going around talking about that message with the people of West Virginia about why being the third largest means we've got all the resources we need.
We are in a difficult time across academia. You know, what is the state of Fairmont State University at this juncture?
Part of the reason I wanted to be university president is because I think that higher ed has given up the debate about the value of a comprehensive education. Nationally and regionally, there's been this push to, well, it should be just job training, just job training. And I think the value of a four-year degree is you do job training embedded in career training, right? So you're not just ready for your first job, you're ready for your job 30 years from now because of the things you learned on a college campus. And we need to get back to explaining to people how that works. And one of the things I always say too is, yes, you could go out and you can get a job, you know, as a welder, doing construction, things like that. It's really hard to be a manager or a supervisor in those areas without a college degree. So we need to find ways to make sure that people can do that first job, where they make good money coming out of college or out of high school while they're doing college alongside that. But we also need to make sure they're prepared for their entire careers.
4 years is a flash in the pan. There's a lot going on. How is that influenced or impacted by the instability that we've seen over the last 6 months coming out of Washington?
One of the strengths of the regional publics is we get support from the federal government. We get support from our state governments. But at the same time, we're built to be efficient. You know, if we lose some of our federal grant money, we have ways that we can pivot and still support our students in the way they need to be supported. I think, you know, you look at some of these big places that are in threat of losing hundreds of millions of dollars from the federal government. That's not us. Right, we have a couple of programs that are federal government supported, but we have great support from the state still, not just direct support to us, but things like Promise and the West Virginia grant. So I'm really pleased with the way the state government's supporting us, and we'll ride out the ride with the federal government. The federal government's always going to change regulations, they're always going to change different levels of support, and we take advantage when that support is there. And then if we need to be a little leaner in some of our programs, we'll still find ways to support them. While we wait for, you know, the federal government to figure out what they're going to do.
You talked a lot about community. What does it do for you to start your academic year by touring the broader West Virginia community?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because obviously we have a lot going on campus. So leaving for a week means when I come back, I'm going to have a lot to do to catch up. But I also know I'm going to come back energized because every time I talk to people about the promise of West Virginia, the promise of what we can do in this state, you can feel that excitement. So I think part of this is that's part of my job, and that's part of our job as leaders in West Virginia, is to make sure we're bragging about these other areas so that when I say, hey, you should come to college in West Virginia, you should come work in West Virginia, people aren't like, well, why would I go to West Virginia? Instead, they can see everything we have to offer, and it becomes a destination for people. It becomes a place where people can see this greatness. I mean, people want to have beautiful natural environments, great people, right? Budding industries, all of those things exist in West Virginia, and we just need to make sure that we're stressing those. And that's why I said a lot of this tour is not about making sure people know what Fairmont State is, but about using the resources we have at Fairmont State to help highlight all the amazing things that are going on in West Virginia.
That was Fairmont State University President Mike Davis speaking to Chris Schultz about his tour of the state this past week to highlight the role of higher education. To read a longer version of this interview, visit our website at wvpublic.org. And that's it for this edition of West Virginia Week. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you back here again next week. As always, you can see these stories and more at wvpublic.org. I'm Maria Young.